It's time for us to get love right, folks. And so we invite you to check out the King and Queen of Hearts.
This is an incredible training for couples who are struggling in unsatisfying sex lives.
It's also for lifelong learners, people whose relationship is great and they want to make it even better.
In this three-part training that is filled with 8 different tutorials like the art of tantric kissing, eye gazing that is deep and intimate, connective and not creepy, and sacred sexual meditations, you do them with your lover to juice you up before sex. Communication tips and really, really valuable relationship essentials are all found in this training.
You know, a common mistake couples make is they wait, they put it off, they avoid, they resist. And if you want to continue doing that, well, good luck. But if you really want to make a change, get this today. Don't let another month go by where you're losing precious connection with your partner.
Plus, you can't beat the price on this program. One of our clients, Casey, said a spark in their intimacy is back on track.
Now, Sarah and her husband, you know what she told us, Willow? She said, finally, he learned how to kiss her right.
Oh my God, hallelujah. So happy for Sarah.
So if you want some radical changes in your love life, go to sexreimagined.com, click on courses, and scroll until you find the King and Queen of Hearts. And because you are a fan of the podcast, you can use the King and Queen 10 code in order to get 10% off. That is King and Queen 10, and you can use it in the checkout. Leah Piper with Sex Reimagined.
And Dr. Willow Brown, so glad you're here.
How do you define love, my friends? The ancient Greek philosophers have already done the work, and they have defined 9 different types of love. I bet you've heard of that. Well, these 9 words for love are going to help you understand how complicated this feeling can really be.
Absolutely. So as you tune in with us and turn on your love light, fall in love with yourself for crying out loud, because inside of you is the deepest love that you'll ever find.
Yep, here we go.
Welcome to the Sex Reimagined podcast, where sex is shame-free and pleasure forward. Let's get into the show.
How many of you out there know about the Greek names for love? Willow, do you know all 9?
I definitely do not know all 9. I'm learning as we go, but I'd say the one that I am most familiar with, and probably all of our listeners are the most familiar with, is the word, the Greek word Eros, which comes from, there was actually a god named Eros, and he was out there shooting arrows in people's hearts to get them to fall in love with each other. So that's where the little Cupid concept came from. And Eros is where we get those terms erotic and erotica, and it's really much more in the vein of sexuality and sensuality than some of the other words for love.
Well, I think just to kind of hang out in Eros for a minute, it's really about like desire and attraction. And so although we oftentimes relate it to that sexual attraction between two people, it's also a way of sort of being in the body and being in your life. If we were to take a more modern viewpoint into the word Eros, it's noticing what gives you aliveness, what turns you on, what plugs you into desire, what is magnetic in your world. And I know for me, taking a look at Eros, who I was really inspired by,
Elaine Quila Dowdy.
She's been on the podcast, and I will put her episode in the show notes because it left a big impression for me. And ever since that episode, I've been looking at Eros in a much bigger way and tuning into what's pulling me forward. What is it about this attraction, whether that's, you know, something I want to buy at the grocery store to cook that night, or it's a beautiful smelling flower, or it's a beautiful person? What is it about them that opens me, that draws forth Eros and desire and a feeling of attraction and openness.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things you can look for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say some people, I feel like, lose their way with Eros. You know, if you've fallen into a really tough spot in life, or you're dealing with, you know, aging parents or cancer or anything that's really just taking your life into a downward direction, it can be hard to find, like, where are the things that spark any desire in me? Where are the things that spark any sort of passion in me? And so that's why looking at Eros from this more nuanced perspective of, like, okay, that orange over there is sparking some desire in me, is sparking some Eros. We want to find those little easy to find places, you know, or just more subtle places in our lives where we can feel a sense of passion, a sense of, I want to go toward that. And give energy to that, because that starts to build more of that energy in your life.
Yeah, and a common mistake is that people will confuse lust with romantic love. And those are different. Sexual attraction can be such a potent and overwhelming sensation. And it can kind of fool the brain and cause some questionable decision making. So you really want to be aware of what your desire is and how it's going to open you or others before you just jump on it. And to just keep in mind that it's such an essential part of romantic relationship. Romantic love is different than Eros, but romantic love, when there is Eros, is like, yummy, yummy, yummy. Those are the things we want to cultivate, especially with long-term relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next one we're going to talk about, you probably haven't heard this word, but it's philia. Philia actually means soul connection. So this isn't necessarily in the erotic or the that deep desire, drive, craving, that sexual nature, but it could be. There could also just be more of a platonic feeling about this. This could be just between friends. It could be just between family members, but there's like a strong soul connection with this. I think that's the distinction.
Yeah. You know, when you like meet someone maybe for the first time or the second time, and man, it's like, you just like them. You're like, I feel like I've known you forever. Yeah. And suddenly you're telling each other your secrets. There's a feeling of, I can confide in this person. And the love and the connection goes really deep. It's kind of like our soul family, the family that we choose, this sort of really connected, soulful friendship. And if you're lucky, you will have that same kind of friendship with your spouse.
Yeah.
Because it's good to be friends with your spouse.
yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, that deep soul connection between you and your romantic partner is going to make that relationship last longer and be healthier for sure. So looking for philia within the Eros is a fantastic way to go. And then also looking for philia, which is, I like the spelling of things when I'm listening to podcasts. It's a P-H-I-L-I-A. So there you go, for those of you who like that spelling to really visualize the word. Looking for that just in your relationships, with your siblings, your relationships with your dear friends, just any kind of close relationships in your life.
Yeah, I think it's been known that the Greek philosopher Plato believed that the combination of philia and eros was the highest form of love, friendship between lovers, which we were just talking about. And it's something that I've repeated a number of times, having learned it from Charles, is that especially in marriage, you want to put your friendship higher than any other. Because when you treat your partner like your friend, it's a good way to go.
Yeah, I love that little Charlesism where he says, friendship is the highest form of relationship. It's really sweet. All right, so our next one, our third of nine, is storge. Storge, S-T-O-R-G-E, is all about the devoted sense of love. So your family, your...
Your mom, your dad, your siblings, your grandma, your cousins. It's the bond that you have with those family members. And oftentimes it can be one-sided. So an example of that is, you know, a parent for a child, where the role is that parent's just devotion and care. It's like you've probably seen this, like some parents just feel like, if not all parents, it seems like their heart is on their sleeve when it comes to their kid.
Yeah, you hear that a lot. Parents say, oh, looks like my little heart is running around outside of me. And you don't have control over it after a certain number of years, you know?
Yeah. And so that's that desire to want to care for that child, to help them feel secure and safe. And a parent doesn't always expect anything in return, right? It's not like they're going, hey, I paid the bills last month. And when you're 18, you're going to owe me a lot of money.
Yeah. That's not happening with this type of love. This is
it's like biological and instinctual.
Yeah. So that's storge for y'all. The next one we're going to cover is a pragma, P-R-A-G-M-A. I had not heard of this, but really good to know about. It's the mature love. So the love that goes on between, you know, long-term partnerships or husband and wife, especially family. Those who are raising kids and having families. And so that deep sense of partnership for the whole, for the good of the family and the whole.
Yeah, I think that could also be experienced in the workplace when you have a passion project, or you are connected to people with a shared goal. You're a part of a family business that like you really care about. So it's based on duty and, again, shared goals. And there's a reason for it. And they say it's not the most exciting of all the love types. You know, you can certainly find it in families and in friendships. And there's something about making personal sacrifices and compromise and making agreements that also work for the betterment of the whole. You might be thinking about, again, career choices, what's best for your relationship. You know, when you're considering your family has, maybe your spouse has an opportunity to get a better job, but it's across the country. You know, do you move or do you stay where you are? Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things is where you really...
Pragma love. Yes. So they say, you know, it's maybe the most difficult to develop and to maintain because of that sense of like giving up your own desires and your own needs for the good of the whole. But
selflessness.
There's also real like a bodhisattva kind of ness to it. That's what I think of. That's where my brain goes.
All right. Number five.
The ludus, the playful love, like ludicrous, kind of like crazy. Yeah. It's L-U-D-U-S, ludus. And it's totally the polar opposite of pragma. Like, it's just like, let's just play and have fun and be wild and let go of our responsibilities and just be more hedonistic and more in that casual way of loving other.
Flirting and teasing, seduction, even casual sex. It's like, I always think it was kind of like being a kid and being on your bike and just going all over town and laughing and buying candy and getting Slurpees and, you know, laying in the grass and looking at the clouds and all those things. That's what it brings to mind for me.
Yeah, this kind of love like can be highly judged by our society, and I think it's undervalued. It's certainly judged, but also undervalued. So there's a way that this kind of love is so good for your soul. It can add years to your life. It's so good for you to just be in that more frivolous, carefree, fun-loving. You know, anytime I'm at a festival and just kind of running around and connecting with this person over here and then connecting with this person over there and just, you know, connecting with myself on the dance floor, that's really this ludus kind of love, just being in love for the sake of being in, capital I, capital N, love.
Right. So I think a lot of people might confuse ludus with eros because there's some similarities, but it's not limited to a physical or sexual relationship. Mm-hmm. Like Willow just said, dancing. You can have fun drinking, smoking a joint with somebody. It's like sensory pleasures that you can share with those you trust or share with new friends, whatever the case may be. It's the love that reminds us to play and be free.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so number six. Now, this one you probably have heard of before, although you probably don't think of it as a type of love. But this is a Greek word for love. It's mania. M-A-N-I-A, mania. And it's all about like obsessive love, obsession with another person or a dream you've had with another person or just anything to do with an obsession.
Yes, a maniac.
Maniac. She's a maniac. Maniac.
So yeah. It can be combined with hedonistic eros, and it's really never combined probably with pragma.
Nope.
Mania often manifests itself through anxiety and emotional instability, jealousy, and possessiveness. So, you know, those stalking behaviors.
Yes, it sounds very destabilizing to me, the mania kind of love. I feel like I tend to steer clear of that in my life just because it takes a lot of energy away from what your, you know, purpose is.
Yeah, you can really develop some unhealthy fixations and certainly some obsessions. Now, during the early stages of a relationship, they say, excess of mania that is unbalanced by other forms of love can lead to dependency and violence and even stalking, all of those things. So there may be periods where you feel a little manic as you're developing a relationship, where I see mania coming into long-term relationships is sometimes if someone's cheating and you have someone that is like feeling like something's off and it seems like they may be obsessing over it, or maybe someone isn't cheating, but one of the partners thinks they are, and they just get into a tailspin. If there's not enough other healthy elements balancing that relationship, then the mania could become very detrimental and unhealthy. But if there's little moments where we overreact or we get obsessive over something, doesn't necessarily mean that your partner's going to turn into, a maniac. They're just having some mania.
Yeah, you know, in Chinese medicine, we look at the heart as holding this like hyperactive emotion of love and joy, this kind of manic state. And so if there's an imbalance in the fire element in your body or in your life, which the heart is related to the fire element, then there's a more of an opportunity for this mania to develop. And I don't know, what do you think about this, Leo? As you were talking, I was thinking, I feel maybe these days there's more opportunity for people to drop into mania, especially younger generations as they're coming into their adulthood, because they don't maybe have the same sort of sense of sovereignty or core within themselves. It's like what we're all doing is we're looking outside of ourselves for validation. We're looking outside of ourselves to be acknowledged and to get the love and the, you know, the dopamine hits that we want to be getting. I was sitting with a girlfriend the other night. I'm like, so show me this Hinge and Bumble thing, because I've never been on a dating app, you know. It's like, let me just look at yours. And I was like, she's like, look, it's a match. And this whole like, you know, confetti went across her screen. And I was like, wow, what a dopamine hit you get from that every time. She's like, yeah, it's really fun. You know, I could just see like her addiction to it. And I was just observing. I was just watching, no judgment. I mean, but it is sort of the world that we're living in. And people are meeting each other that they would never otherwise meet, for better or for worse, through these types of apps. And so anyway, back to my point of like, we're reaching outside of ourselves for validation. I feel like there's more opportunity to drop into mania based on that. Of course, everyone's on their own individual journey. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I think you really make an interesting point. And I'm sure due to our technology having advanced so much since we were younger, it can be even more crazy making. Yes, I do believe there's probably an increase in what we could label as mania. I remember when I had a breakup, two significant breakups early on in my young, later teen, early 20 years. And just like, it wasn't that I was stalking them, but I couldn't stop thinking about them. And every time the phone rang, I was hoping it was them. And there were times that I would call, but they wouldn't answer. And I remember like driving around in the car and sort of driving near the places that they hung out and hoping I would see them outside, hoping I would run into them in one form or another, visiting the bars that they visited too, in the hopes of just getting any amount of attention. And that was really painful. And I thought, and I think that is a kind of a good example of a little bit of mania love, where you're kind of desperate for their attention and for their acknowledgement and for them wanting you. Yeah. And, you know, when they don't, and you eventually heal. But I remember a lot of car rides, listening to sad songs, thinking about a couple different boys. Interesting time in life.
Yeah, those are hard times, and they happen at all different times of your, you know, looking for love journey. So no matter what age you're at. So if you're in that state, our hearts go out to you because we get it. We know, we understand it's hard stuff. And I think the solution is to come back home to your own inner beloved and really nurture and find that, that universal sense of self-love inside of yourself for healing the mania that could potentially take its grip on you. Okay, so next word we're going to look at here. I never heard of this one before. It's Meraki, M-E-R-A-K-I, which is all about creativity. So could have a sexual element.
Yeah, to do something wholeheartedly with love, creativity, and devotion. So think now on, you know, your favorite pursuits, you know, your favorite sports, your favorite hobbies, your favorite ways to pass the time where, you know, it just opens you, brings you joy. It's a wholehearted experience. I really love this one.
You know, it makes me think of one of the yoga sutras, which is Ishvara Pranidhana, which is, they say of all the, you know, different sutras, which are like the 10 commandments of yoga, like this is the one that if you really just devote your creativity and your essence to God, if you devote your craft to the universe, to the one, to the most high, you know, to spirit, then everything else falls into place. So I love this Meraki from the Greeks, which is really about like devoting your essence, your creativity to whatever it is that really lights you up.
Well, what's interesting, I think what you just described in terms of like devoting it to whatever spiritual, you know, faith you have, I think we're going to find that one in Agape, which will be a little bit down the list. Right. Whereas I think this is really, you know, having us consider what opens in you, that opens your heart when you look at like a portrait, like a really beautiful picture, you know, of something that just takes your breath away, or maybe it's somebody special, or, you know, there's a couple pictures of Matt's grandparents when they were just falling in love. And it's like you feel the essence of that so beautifully. And I often feel, is it Meraki?
Meraki.
Meraki. I feel that when I'm cooking, like I made a beautiful roast chicken last night, and I'm going to make Matt's favorite meal, which is a homemade chicken pot pie. I make the crust myself. It's very buttery and lovely. It's not on the diet plan. It's rich and delicious. And I love like the whole process of like picking out the most beautiful produce and picking out and cutting the chicken with so much awareness, and the way I make the gravy. It's definitely a wholehearted, meditative, joyful thing I get to do. And I think the other thing that I really love that would fit in this category, which I also did yesterday, is I love to organize a drawer and put things into categories and label them. And sometimes I color code them, and I'm always looking for the boxes that are going to fit the drawer just right. So like the joy of organizing, I mean, I get that book, you know, really the show, makes total sense in my world. So what are some of the things that you do wholeheartedly, Willow, that sort of spark your creativity and your devotion to, you know, your hobbies, I guess.
Yeah, I'm always asking myself that. I'm like, what are my artistic expressions? Because a lot of it bleeds into my work. But I mean, I love to write. I love to just free write and creative writing. And then I love to cultivate my essence, whether that's doing Qigong or running on the beach or, you know, just doing a sex magic practice or something along those lines. It's really, sometimes I wonder, God, do I have anything outside of my work that I love to do? Because I'm not a big cooker. I love to cook like a good soup, but you
yeah,
know,
but
I'm
you're
not
a great cook.
I'm a good cook.
But you don't like love it.
It's not like I want to get in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
And I think other than that, I love to sing. I really love to sing. I love to play the harmonium or the rattle or the guitar and just belt it out.
Yeah, love that. Yeah, it seems like your artistic expression so much is like in the movement of your body and in your breath and the way
that
you
dance.
Yeah, express yourself through yoga and even like going on these walks and walking through a what's it called? It's like a spiral
portal.
Well, it actually is a portal.
Oh, the
it's a certain path. What's that called?
The labyrinth.
Yeah. Like you will notice those things before anyone else does.
I'm always doing witchy things. I think that's my creative expression. Putting stuff in the cauldron and doing a whole ceremony and a ritual around it.
In fact, if you ever get the privilege and the chance to do Qigong with Willow, it is very much a nature forward artistic way of being in your breath and in your body, and it's gentle and it's beautiful and it looks almost like dancing. It's such a beautiful art form. And Willow, please, if you're listening to this and you want to try this out, let's convince Willow to do a weekly online Qigong class where we can all gather and practice that beautiful love form where we can get more Meraki in our world.
Yeah, let's
do
it.
Would you do that, Willow?
Heck,
how many people do you need to contact you for you to make that commitment?
Let's say 25.
All right, that's easy.
Come on, 25. Hit me up.
25. All right. I'm going to go ask Google how to pronounce it.
Okay. Because it looks like philia tio. I can't even pronounce it. But it's self-love. So this was, the Greek philosopher Aristotle believed that this level of self-love is the prerequisite to loving others. And I'm going to have to agree with Aristotle. I think he's right. Healthy self-love is absolutely crucial for every single sector of your life, from your health to your home, to your family, to your finances, to your sexuality, to every part of your life. If there's a strong, deep sense of self-love, then everything else will follow. And it's something that you can fall back on and lean on to really, whenever things get challenging in the outer world, in outer relationships or in the outer environment, you can always come back to loving yourself more deeply and more fully, no matter what's going on in your life. Did you get the pronunciation?
Yeah. And take a look at it. I posted it for you to see. Filativa.
Ah, yes, you did. Filativa. It's right here. Filativa.
Yeah. Filativa. I think this is such a a number one love. I would probably put it at the top of any of these.
It's the most important.
It's the most important. It affects everything you do. It affects every choice you make. It affects who you attract into your life, who you do relationship with. I really struggled with this one. You know, I probably mentioned on other episodes, just like the depth of self-loathing I once experienced in my life, and to really confront that inner critic and learn to turn the volume up on that self-approving, loving, precious voice that truly sees your essence. My God, do all the work you can do to get there if you're not there now. Willow, what do you do what do you do for yourself or how do you coach somebody else if they're really struggling with self-love and they're up against feeling worthless?
Yeah, it's a really challenging place to be, and I think that we've all been there. So there's a lot of understanding and compassion. And when I'm working with myself or with another, I think that's the number one thing to meet someone with is compassion. Like, hey, you've been through some shit. You've been through some hard stuff. So it makes sense that you're feeling this level of hopelessness or this level of self-loathing. And let's take a look at where that lives in your body. So I can do this for myself, do a somato-emotional release practice, or I can do it with a client, I can do it virtually, or I can do it in person. And it's just about going and finding that place inside of your body where that self-loathing or that lack of self-worth lives and becoming friends with it, getting to know it and listening to it and understanding what wisdom it has for you. Like, why is it there and what does it really want you to know at this point in your life? And so we listen in all different kinds of ways, visually, auditorially, sensorially. And it's really nice to have someone guide you through this. In fact, when I was going through a recent really challenging time, I had someone else hold space for me for to do this practice, and it was a much, much easier to go through the practice and to get the wisdom that I needed to get out of it when I wasn't having to hold the space for myself at the same time that I was going through the practice.
That makes so much sense. And also, because it's like you want to listen to the voice, and what you're listening for is the wisdom in what the part is trying to say that they need. It's not about listening to the voice and believing the criticism. Those are two important distinctions. And parts work is such a beautiful type of being with yourself wholeheartedly. I think also people sometimes think self-love, I mean, maybe they confuse that with being selfish or full of themselves or arrogant or, oh, they always brag, or, this idea that they're full of themselves. And this is about healthy self-love, and it's not arrogant. It's not that you hold yourself as superior to anyone else just because you love yourself. It's really about holding themselves in high regard the way that they hold other people in high regard. And that there's a certain resilience that we attain when we have a healthy awareness of self-love. We're not always looking for external validation, or we're compulsive about needing approval. And so therefore you have an ability to be self-reflective, and also you're more aware of being inclusive of other people in your world and knowing what their struggles are.
I know. It's really just about self-acceptance, like loving yourself for who you are, not who you think you
Not
should be, or who
what you
others think you
do.
should be, or who you wish you were. It's like it's about meeting yourself where you're at. And that's another medicine of the heart, is that deep level of acceptance. Meeting yourself where you are and accepting yourself as you are does not mean that you're not going to grow, evolve, and become more. It just means that you're actually acknowledging that you're at this stage and this point on your journey, and it's all really important. We don't want to miss one of the stepping stones. If we miss a stepping stone, we're bypassing and we're hopping over something that could be exactly what we need 7 or 8 stepping stones from now. So this type of self-love, philatia, philavtia is how you pronounce it, philavtia. So it's Philautia, but it's pronounced Philoctia, and it's as we've been saying, it's the most important kind of love, and it's the foundation of all the other love that you feel in your life.
And if I could just like wrap up this with that, it's really about knowing that you matter, and it's not about what you do. It's just that that's who you are. You are worthy of love. You are love. That is your essence. End of story. And your worthiness is not dependent on what you achieve.
That's right. And when you truly, truly know that, you're less likely to look outside of yourself for that for that validation. Yeah.
And you're also more equipped to shine that out to other people who need to know it. You become a reflection, and you end up giving permission for other people to see that in themselves. And I love that.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's magnetic.
Number nine.
Okay, final
agape.
One. Agape.
Unconditional love. Yes. Yeah, you've heard that one.
Yeah, so unconditional love. What does that really mean? That means to love without putting conditions on people. I mean, it's really quite an amazing feat to do. I think loving your children unconditionally is probably the most common and the easiest that people experience, that humans experience in a lifetime. But to really like love your partner unconditionally, I mean, have you put that into practice lately? Because it's a challenging one. There's always like something that you want them to do so that you'll do this. And, you know, it's a relationship. So there's a lot of give and take. But to love them no matter what they choose to do or not do is the practice of agape.
Yeah, you know, I can see that in some people that I know who've had to get a divorce, but they've kept the love. Mm. You know, it's like, I love you and we're going to walk separate paths for a while. Mm-hmm. I think another place that people might really be able to relate to agape, this unconditional love, is with their pet.
Oh, yeah.
And even though you don't always love it when they make a mistake on the floor, they chew up something important like an expensive shoe. your heart fills when you're with them. Mm-hmm. They make life more precious. And I think practicing agape, I think people experience agape when they're in deep prayer, when they're in meditation, when they're practicing their faith, when they feel that sense of like belonging to the whole. Mm-hmm. And it's like grace. I think when we are experiencing a moment of grace, that's like the purest form of agape, where unconditional love is being shined on us.
Mm. And it's like, it overshadows everything else. It overshadows all the conditions, all the problems, all the relationship human stuff that gets in intermixed in your relationships. And when you're in that divine union with spirit, when you're in that place of pure agape or pure consciousness or pure love, there's nothing else really matters. There's a lot of pressure and weight gets taken off of your mind and your heart, because nothing else really matters. It's being in a state of coherence. We were just talking about that on another interview. And it's where the mind and the heart are like tick-tocking at the same channel, at the same wavelength. Like they're on the same, you know,
frequency.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, I think of also like this agape doesn't require for it to be returned.
Yeah.
If you think that someone has to now love you unconditionally, it's not a trade. Unconditional love is just for you to experience and feel. And there's a couple prayers that I think lead people into unconditional love. One is the loving kindness meditation, which I think is so beautiful. I love it. Mm-hmm. If you want to know more about the loving kindness meditation, I've got a cheat sheet. You can practice it.
Nice.
Just email support@sexreimagined.com. We'll make sure you get a copy. And then there is the Onopono prayer. Did I say that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Hawaiian prayer. I love you. I forgive you. I forget how it goes.
I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
We probably said that out of order, but
we definitely did. But you guys know. Those of you who know.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah,
I was at a workshop once, and there was a voice coach there, and she led us through the most beautiful singing meditation
of that
prayer, and just everyone was crying as you sort of review your life and think about everyone you want to just bestow that to, including yourself.
Yeah,
and it's such a beautiful practice of unconditional love, of walking your way back home to unconditional love.
I think I'm going to start saying that prayer. That's a good one. Let's all start saying that prayer to ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, it goes, I love you. Thank you. Please forgive me.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
It's only four sentences.
And we're missing one.
I thank you. Please forgive me. I love you.
You're awesome.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Please
That's
forgive
it.
me. I love you. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
All right, Jill. Well, enjoy that prayer and enjoy your deep sense of agape and self-love and all the other fun kinds of love out there, including a little bit of mania.
Interweave. Yeah. Yeah. These all work together. We don't just experience one after the other. They're not linear.
No.
They are simultaneous. Mm-hmm. So go be these beautiful 9 Greek words, but maybe keep it a little under control when it comes to mania. There's probably a wonderful way of being a true manic in certain situations, like with chocolate or something.
I think it's just about being in total rapture and joy.
Rapture. Yes. All right, y'all, you go have yourself a day filled with rapture and all the other kinds of love. Ciao.
Much love, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. This episode was hosted by Tantric Sex Master Coach and Positive Psychology Facilitator, Leah Piper, as well as by Chinese and Functional Medicine Doctor and Taoist Sexology Teacher, Dr. Willow Brown. Don't forget, your comments, likes, subscribes, and suggestions matter. Let's realize this new world together.
Awaken Arousal Oil is my new best friend. Like Laura says, holy forking shirt balls, did it deliver on its promise. I could feel the blood flow and warmth, and that was the easiest I've ever achieved multiple orgasms. This is all natural botanical oils. It is made with CBD because CBD helps relax muscles and it eases tension. This stuff smells so good and it mixes with your pheromones like, mwah, so good. Get yourself some. Link is in the show notes.